Got a sprain or an itch, pain that's swelling or twitch, call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky, Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. For years, we as healthcare providers have wished that there was some kind of test that could be done in the office to determine if a patient has or does not have pain, and how much pain they were actually in.
Apparently, a breakthrough test has been developed by Indiana University School of Medicine researchers to measure pain in patients.
Now, this study was led by psychiatry professor Alexander Nicolescu and published this week in the Nature journal Molecular Psychiatry. The researchers attempted to identify actual biomarkers in the blood that can help objectively determine how severe a patient's pain is. Now, this blood test would be the first of its kind. We have developed a prototype for a blood test that can objectively tell doctors if the patient is in pain and how severe that pain is, at least according to Dr. Nicolescu. And he said that it is very important to have an objective measurement of pain, as pain is a subjective sensation. For those of us who are hazy on the difference between subjective and objective, here's our take on it.
Subjective refers to personal feelings or opinion entering decision-making process, whereas objective refers to the process that is purely based on hard facts.
Until now, we have to rely on patients' self-reporting on the clinical impression the doctor has. In other words, subjective findings. During the study, the researchers looked at biomarkers found in the blood.
Even this could be confusing to non-researchers, just as glucose or sugar serves as a biomarker to diabetes. These biomarkers allow doctors to assess the severity of the pain the patient is truly experiencing.
Especially in emergency rooms, patients may come in and exaggerate their pain levels when they talk to the medical personnel, possibly to get medication for their supposed pain. But in addition to providing an objective measure of pain, the new blood test helps physicians match the biomarkers in the patient's blood with potential treatment options.
The biomarker would act like a fingerprint. The lab or the physician could match it against a database and see which pain medication would normalize the signature.
The researchers are convinced that they can match biomarkers with existing medications and natural compounds, which would reduce or even eliminate the need to use the opioids.
By treating and prescribing medicine more appropriately to the individual person, this prototype may help alleviate the dilemmas that have contributed to current opioid problems that some patients face today.
One of the main goals of any physician or healthcare provider is to couple the right treatment with the correct diagnosis. We want to use a good treatment and cause very little, if any, harm. But there is even more to the research. The study experts discovered biomarkers that not only match with non-addictive drugs that can treat pain, but can also help predict when someone might experience pain in the future.
The results of these studies may also help to determine if a patient is exhibiting chronic long-term pain, which might result in future emergency room visits.
Of course, they first needed to find some markers for pain that are universal. They said that they were able to do just that. It's interesting that they noted that some markers that work better for men and some that work better for women.
It could even be that there are some markers that work better for headaches, some markers that work better for fibromyalgia, and so on. Their goal is to look into this with the future larger studies.
I'm sorry I had to yawn. You know, a lot of people have a real problem with sleep. Or should I say lack of it? The symptom is called insomnia. You may have or still suffer from lack of sleep, so you might be wondering what treatments are available to insomniacs, or even those that only occasionally have sleep problems. So you may be wondering which drugs and supplements commonly used for the treatment of insomnia really work and are actually supported by clinical evidence and best medical practice.
So now the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as well as the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, the AASM, say that there is an insomnia epidemic.
And the number is not low. In fact, around 30 to 50% of people suffer acute or transient symptoms at some point in their lifetimes. And in 5 to 10% of cases, these symptoms persist and they develop into a chronic condition. We now know that lack of sleep has broad negative effects on our health. This includes increased mortality, accidents, injury, as well as disability. Now let's start with the actual definition of insomnia. You can say that it is the difficulty that a patient has with initiating or maintaining sleep that results in some form of daytime impairment.
I thought with today's work pattern and so many people working nighttime jobs, I think that we need to further define insomnia as a difficulty that a patient has with initiating or maintaining sleep that results in some form of abnormal sleep time impairment.
Doctors and researchers love categorizing diseases, and symptoms and insomnia is no different. So primary insomnia simply means sleep problems due to, well, who knows? Whereas secondary insomnia is sleep aberrations due to a known acute or even chronic medical condition.
For example, obstructive sleep apnea, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and allergies. It could be due to medications that you are taking, such as decongestants, opioids, stimulants, substances like caffeine, alcohol, or nicotine, or other environmental factors.
The goal of treatment is really twofold. First, to cure the symptom, that is the insomnia itself. And second, to find the cause of the insomnia, as in secondary insomnia, and try to treat that as well. Remember, though, that it is not just the amount of time that one sleeps that is important, but the quality of that sleep.
Which will also include behavioral therapy as part of the treatment regimen. However, if that does not help, then certainly medical treatment should be considered. You might also consider starting with medications if the thought is that the insomnia will be very short-lived.
The sleep aids that have been recommended for treatment of insomnia include the benzodiazepines, benzodiazepine receptor agonists, which are also called the Z drugs, orexin receptor antagonists, tricyclic antidepressants, and even melatonin receptor agonists.
Studies have shown that these have short-term efficacy when compared to placebo in clinical trials.
Patients should always be maintained on the lowest effective dose of any medication, really, and the medication should be tapered and discontinued when conditions allow.
Long-term use of these medications may be indicated only for those with severe insomnia or insomnia that does not respond to other medications.
Now, you may be wondering about the over-the-counter agents, such as diphenhydramine and the herbal or dietary supplements, including melatonin and valerian root. We simply are not recommending these because of the real lack of evidence supporting their efficacy as well as safety.
Generally, all of these medications should be administered on an empty stomach and at least 30 minutes before bedtime. One of these reasons that you should avoid giving them with food is that this can cause a delay in onset of action of these medications.
Also, something that many patients should know is that they should really not take a dose if they plan to get less than 7 to 8 hours of sleep. Also, middle-of-the-night dosing is just not recommended. Remember that these are not innocuous drugs. The benzodiazepines, even with short-term, but especially with long-term use, has the potential able to cause physical dependence.
It is also important to remember that rapid dose decreases or even abrupt discontinuation can produce withdrawal symptoms, including rebound or worsening insomnia and anxiety. If for whatever reason your pharmacist refuses to fill any benzodiazepine that you have been prescribed by your physician, please inform your doctor as soon as possible.
Some of the sleep agents, such as esopiclone and temazepam, have been associated with the greater risk for next-day impairment.
Be careful driving on many of these drugs that day after taking these medications, since they may cause sedation and further next-day impairment.
Remember that all agents have the potential to cause significant cognitive impairment, including abnormal thinking and behavior changes, as well as memory impairment and central nervous system depression.
You also will need to be very aware of other medications that you are taking. If you wish to use an over-the-counter medication and you are taking other prescribed medications, be sure to tell your physician what your intentions are.
There is an addictive effect on psychomotor performance with concomitant CNS depressants and alcohol. A fairly commonly prescribed sleep medication is Zolpidem. You may know it as the brand name Ambien, which has been associated with sleepwalking, sleep driving, sleep eating, even sleep sex, night terrors, and other abnormal sleep-related behaviors. These same problems that I just mentioned with Zolpidem have also been noted in patients taking the Z drugs. There are certain groups of patients that need to be more careful with the use of these medications for insomnia. These include the elderly.
As a matter of fact, the American Geriatric Society's 2019 updated beer criteria for potentially inappropriate medication use in older adults recommends avoiding benzodiazepines due to a significant risk for adverse effects such as cognitive impairment, delirium, falls, and fractures.
Avoidance of benzodiazepine receptor agents, again called the Z drugs, in older adults is also recommended due to their minimal efficacy in treating insomnia and an adverse effect profile similar to that of the benzodiazepines.
We have mentioned the Z drug, but I don't think that we told you what is meant by that. The Z drugs include esopiclone, brand name Lunesta, Zaleplon, also called Sonara, and Zolpidem, sold under the brand name Ambien.
Benzodiazepines and the Z drugs are generally not recommended for the management of insomnia during pregnancy or in women who are breastfeeding.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Now, we've been teaching mindfulness training for chronic pain at Southside Medical Center for a long time. But mindfulness training is also applicable for many patients with problems with insomnia. Right off the bat, I want to tell you that just as with chronic pain, mindfulness is not going to cure everybody or even help everybody.
However, a significant number of patients who suffer from either chronic pain or insomnia will receive significant success with mindfulness training. So listen on.
If you understand that stress is very often a cause of insomnia, then you can easily understand how mindfulness training can help. So the stress literally keeps our mind racing and you remain in a state of what's called hyperarousal.
Remember, when you go to sleep, your mind should be able to turn off all the internal noise so that it can relax, reduce brain waves, and give itself time to regenerate, just like muscles do.
Mindfulness turns out to be a great cure for insomnia caused by stress. And if you're not at all familiar with the term mindfulness, then let us diverge just for a second to define mindlessness, which is a state we also often refer to as being on autopilot, where our attention is absorbed in our wandering minds and we are not really present in our own lives. This period of autopilot can actually take up 40% of the time. We often live hyper lives, and it's just too easy to lose ourselves in autopilot for much of the day, every day.
One problem with being on autopilot for such a long time daily is that we tend to get lost in doing. So we find ourselves constantly striving and struggling and getting stuff done instead of really living.
We also become vulnerable to anxiety, stress, and depression. So let's get back to mindfulness. It is simply the opposite of mindlessness. Getting ourselves out of autopilot, we mentioned, and taking the bull by the horns of our attention again. We can practice mindfulness by maintaining a moment-by-moment awareness of our thoughts, feelings, body sensations, and the surrounding environment.
Mindfulness training teaches us how to do that. You could say that it is a non-judgmental action of paying attention to our own thoughts and feelings with the attitude of an impartial witness.
Studies have shown that the mindfulness improves regulation of stress and it increases a sense of calm that results in a better ability to sleep. In a clinical study conducted by the University of Minnesota's Academic Health Center, it was shown that people suffering from chronic insomnia who underwent a mindfulness-based stress reduction program had results, listen to this, equivalent to another group who used pharmaceutical sleep aids.
All participants fell asleep more quickly, slept longer, and better. It is also important to note that the portion of the group that took pharmaceuticals throughout the study reported side effects, but the group trained in mindfulness did not.
So here we have a treatment without side effects and the positive potential benefits of mindfulness that extend beyond sleep. With a little practice, those suffering from insomnia due to stress overload will likely find marked improvements, not only in their insomnia, but also in their overall ability to handle stress in daily life.
Do you want a better, perhaps happier, and more fruitful life? Well, don't change the channel now, as we will give you the way to practice mindfulness with an emphasis on treating insomnia. The first thing is to find an area that is fairly quiet where you can sit undisturbed for 10 to 20 minutes. It does not have to be totally silent, nor pitch black if possible. So dim the lights, sit down, and take a lot of your chest.
Relax. Try to settle yourself both mentally and physically. Now, take your time to make yourself as comfortable as possible in an upright seated position.
We are not talking about the yoga position with legs crossed and back straight up. Although that is fine too, as long as you get comfortable. You can use any cushions, stools, or other props to ensure total comfort.
As a matter of fact, if my back is tired from a long day of sitting or exercise, I've found that lying down with my head and shoulders slightly propped up works best for me. But just relax. This is not a contest. It's fairly important to keep the spine erect, but more important, relax.
If you are in a chair or couch, aim not to slouch, but to keep the spine straight again, if that is comfortable for you.
You may want to sit slightly forward so that your back is not in contact with the chair back. When you're comfortable, Close your eyes.
In order to relax or detend your body and get yourself less stressed, you might take a moment and mentally tune into your own body and notice any parts that may be tense. Maybe it's your shoulders, face, jaw, or low back.
I actually link to mentally a picture of each part of my body from feet to hips and up to my neck, tensing and then relaxing each part of my body for a few seconds. By initially tensing, I feel that I get a better relaxation of all of my body. Once you've done that, take 3 deep breaths. First, slowly breathe in, and then with each exhalation, imagine the tension just melting away out of the body parts. Do this 3 times, as I said. Now, this may sound funny, but bear with us. Take the whole focus of your attention to the tip of the nostrils.
Note the sensations of your breath entering and leaving the body. You may note a slightly cool sensation as you inhale and a warmer sensation upon exhalation.
Try to keep your mind on those sensations and allow the sensations to completely absorb your attention. Stay with this for about 5 minutes or more if you can. Next, follow the flow of the breath as it moves through the nostrils, down the throat, during both inhalation and exhalation.
Note that thoughts may drift through your mind. Don't worry about it, as that is perfectly normal. There is no need to resist them or try to push them away, and there is no need to be concerned with the nature of any particular thought.
This is really the crux of mindfulness training. Take the attitude that you are there as just an impartial observer to your own thoughts, any thoughts that may arise. Your goal at this time is only to remain focused on your breathing.
If it does distract you, don't worry. Simply gently bring your focus back to your breath.
Don't worry. Be happy.
When you finally feel the need to end the session, then again take 3 deep abdominal breaths and feel the weight of your body against the chair. Recall the room you're sitting in and the time of day.
If you're suffering from insomnia, research shows that you will likely benefit greatly from a regular mindfulness practice like this one. A little bit each day, even if it's only 10 minutes, try and do it daily or at least 3 times a week.
You'll find that with regular practice, you'll be able to rest easy.
If you or any of your family members have been prescribed any medication that are being rejected or denied at the pharmacy, and you feel that the medication is both appropriate and medically necessary, then you need to make your voice known. Contact your state and federal representatives and tell them what's happening. It is only with this that we can write the wrongs that are being perpetrated on a large part of our citizenry and their human rights when they are denied appropriate and necessary treatment.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV, AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at compassionatecarejacks.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com.
Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.